Hey, hello everybody. Thank you very much for being here today. I am Dominic Torno. I am the founder and CEO of Resonate, where we focus on a distributed async await, a programming model made a programming model designed to make distributed applications dead simple. I'm also the author of Think Distributed Systems, which is currently part of Manning Publications' Early Access Program. And the book focuses on dependable mental models to empower you to reason confidently about distributed systems. So I spend most of my time on distributed systems. And distributed systems are known for their complexity. We all just know that distributed systems are really, really complex. But what at its core makes distributed systems so complex? And there are two reasons, two fundamental sources of complexity. The first is non-deterministic partial order, introduced by concurrency. In a distributed system, we do not know what happens next. And the second is non-deterministic partial failure, introduced by distribution. In a distributed system, we simply do not know what will fail next. So as an aside, feel free to take pictures throughout the presentation, and I've marked some slides as an aha moment to highlight what I think are like the most insightful slides of the presentation. This is one of my favorites. Now, let's consider a simple, very abstract example to develop an intuition. We have two processes, P and Q, each consisting of three atomic actions, three steps. So first, let's introduce sequentiality. The defining characteristic of sequentiality is total order and total application. A sequential system executes one step at a time in a predetermined sequence. So consequentially, the sequential composition of P and Q leads to exactly one possible execution. There is no room for alternative behavior. But then we introduce concurrency, and the defining characteristic of concurrency is non-deterministic partial order. So consequentially, the concurrent composition of P and Q already leads to 20 distinct steps of possible executions. And then lastly, let's introduce distribution. Yeah? And the defining characteristic of distribution is non-deterministic partial failure. So consequentially, the distributed composition of P and Q leads to 69 distinct possible executions. And in a real system, some of these executions are very common, while others are exceedingly rare. So for example, imagine a scenario where a server accepts a connection at the exact moment a configuration reload is triggered, right? A highly unlikely sequence of events. So and now let's do a simple thought experiment. Yeah? Given that we have 69 distinct traces, so let's assume 10% of these traces are the happy path. They occur 90% of the time. And 90% of these traces are edge cases. They only occur 10% of the time. It turns out, if we non-deterministically pick a trace according to this probability distribution 1,000 times, the chances of missing at least one trace are almost 100%. So these rare traces provide the ideal breeding ground for the dreaded Heisenbug. The term Heisenbug is inspired by the Heisenberg uncertainty principle from quantum mechanics. Heisenbugs are elusive, right? The rarity of the traces that hide them makes them really hard to produce. And by the off chance we actually produce one, it's almost impossible to reproduce them. Right? And now take a moment to imagine the behavior space of a real-world distributed system with dozens or even hundreds of processes, and each of these processes has dozens or hundreds of steps. So the number of possible executions grows combinatorially. And that phenomenon is aptly called behavior state explosion. Yeah. But concurrency and distribution, they don't just expand the behavior space. Yeah. They make reasoning about a system almost incomprehensible. Concurrency and distribution introduce daunting uncertainty. And this uncertainty is the true challenge we face when we design distributed systems. So there is a direct correlation between certainty and confidence. Yeah. When I am certain about my application, I am confident in my application's correctness. Right? So making changes, adding new features, or even deploying to production on a Friday afternoon, no problem. Yeah. With deterministic simulation testing, you have a key component to achieving this level of certainty and confidence by methodically exploring the behavior space, scaling across space and time. So throughout the rest of this presentation, we build a foundational understanding of distributed simulation testing step by step. And then we build a dependable mental model so you can all decide with confidence if deterministic simulation testing is the right approach for you. So let's begin by grounding our discussion with a mental model of software systems. For our discussion, we'll think of a software system as being partitioned into two distinct entities, the environment and the application. That is the highest level system model that is universally applicable. What's in, what's out. The environment represents everything that is not the object that we are developing and testing. And the application represents everything that is the object that we are developing and testing. Now, our goal is to test the application. To achieve this, the application under testing conditions must closely resemble the application under production conditions. Yeah? Any deviation must be non-material. Otherwise, we're risking to test something fundamentally different. However, our goal is not to test the environment. Yeah? The environment is only a means to facilitate the test. So therefore, the environment under testing conditions does not have to resemble the environment under production conditions at all. Right? We are free to replace, completely mock, any component in the environment as we see fit. Now, the question is, how do we delineate between the environment and the application? And there is no universal answer. Where you delineate depends entirely on your requirements. So here we see an example of a web application composed of three distinct components. A client on the left, a web server in the center, and a database server on the right. A reasonable choice is to assign the client to the environment while treating the web server and the database server as part of the application. The focus is on testing the web server and database server in composition. But a reasonable alternative is to assign both the client and the database server to the environment and treat the web server as the application. The focus then is on testing the web server in isolation. Now that we have a mental model of software systems, when is a software system correct? And how do we establish the correctness of a software system? Correctness is not absolute. Correctness is relative to a specification. For example, think of your parents. I bet most of you had, at least I had, one parent who is stricter and one parent who is more lenient. Right? So the very same behavior, my behavior, one parent, usually my mother, she would scold me for it, whereas my dad would cut me some slack. Right? So the same implementation can be considered correct or incorrect depending entirely on the specification that we choose to apply. Now, as Leslie Lamport explores in his foundational work specifying systems, software systems can be understood as state machines. Right? A state machine is remarkably simple but very powerful reasoning tool. Yeah? A state machine consists of three components: a set of states, yeah? A set of initial states, here just one, and a next state relation that determines how we transition from one state to the next. When we execute a state machine, the state machine generates a trace. A trace is a sequence of states that represents the system's behavior over time. Traces are at the heart of how we reason about software systems. Each trace represents a unique execution of the system. Now, a state machine is non-deterministic if it presents a choice, right? Or in more sinister terms, if it presents some ambiguity. So in this example, from S1, we may transition to S2 or to S3. This is reflected in the set of possible traces given the initial state of S1. In this example, from S1, we may generate two distinct traces, S1 to S2 or S1 to S3. So given the same initial state, we may witness different traces. The state machine is deterministic if the next state relationship is a function. That is, if the state machine does not present any choice. In a deterministic state machine, there is no ambiguity, just a single predictable path forward. And this is also reflected in the possible traces given the initial state of S1. So in this example, S1, there is only one trace that we can possibly generate. That is from S1 to S2 to S3. So the same initial state, we will always witness the same trace. Now coming back to the specification and implementation relationship that we discussed earlier, in effect, a specification is a set of traces. Right? These traces represent all the valid behaviors allowed by the application, by the specification. So an implementation is correct with respect to a specification if every possible trace of the implementation is also a trace of the specification. And consequently, an implementation is incorrect with respect to the specification if some traces of the implementation are not traces of the specification. So how can we establish correctness? There are two possibilities. There's software verification and there is software testing. Software verification aims to prove that all traces of the implementation are within the specification. Software testing aims to find some traces outside of the specification. So in summary, if the verification asserts the system is correct, so the verification asserts there is no correctness violation. No correctness violation will ever occur. If the test asserts the system is correct, the test merely asserts that no correctness violation has yet occurred. Right? We may find one later,